My greatest concern is that my citizens feel safe. That's what I care about. I don't care about anything else. I want this. I don't want 50 cameras around me. I want to be watching a basketball game here, watching my kids play in this gym. People keep forgetting. I'm a local politician. I live in this town. I live two blocks from here. I live two blocks from the train tracks. I'm concerned just like everybody else.
When's the last time you spoke with Norfolk Southern?
I speak with them every day. They've been working with us tremendously. But they should, because they're the ones that screwed this up.
That's Trent Conaway, the mayor of East Palestine, Ohio, visibly frustrated during last night's town hall in the high school gymnasium. The meeting let residents express their fear and anger over a freight train derailment nearly 2 weeks ago. A massive toxic plume has spread, killing fish in the Ohio River, and residents have reported sick and dead pets. People are terrified of the long-term environmental and health consequences. Norfolk Southern Railway representatives did not attend the meeting, by the way. They said in a statement that they were, quote, increasingly concerned about the growing physical threat to our employees. Well, this derailment likely could have been avoided. In recent years, the rail industry has successfully beaten back more government safety regulations while slashing its workforce by nearly a third, all the while reaping record profits. Last year, Norfolk Southern took in a record $12.7 billion just last year. Umair Irfan is senior correspondent at Vox, where he covers climate change and energy policy. Welcome back to Press Play.
Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you. This disaster has been compared to a mini Chernobyl. Is it really that bad?
I mean, at this point, it's a little bit hard to say. It's hard to kind of thread the needle here between conveying the full stakes of this, but also not trying to overstate it as well. There has been a lot of misinformation and exaggerated information spreading online about the scope of this. But at the same time, you know, there is a lot of, I think, very valid skepticism about what residents are being told about the full scope of this disaster. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and state and local environmental officials say that according to their monitoring and their instruments on the ground, that the conditions are safe for residents to return. But residents are saying that they can still smell chemical odors and have reported that some of their pets have died and that they've seen dead fish in the river. So what they're seeing and what they're being told seems a little bit incongruent at this point.
Right. And the main culprit, chemically speaking, is this stuff called vinyl chloride. What is this and what is the possible danger it poses?
Well, vinyl chloride is a precursor to a number of different chemicals. Vinyl chloride you may recognize from polyvinyl chloride, you know, so the plastic that's used to make pipes and a whole bunch of other fabrics. When it's polymerized, when it's made into this plastic material, it's actually fairly safe and inert. In fact, that's part of the reason why plastics don't degrade in the environment and last such a long time when they're disposed. But as the monomer, as the individual building blocks, it's actually a very highly reactive chemical. It really wants to react with whatever chemical it can come into contact with. And so when it spilled, officials decided that the best thing to do was actually to burn it, that in order to prevent it from causing any further dangerous chemical reactions, combusting it and turning it into a less harmful compound was the safest course of action. When it's shipped as this chilled liquid at typically around minus 14 degrees Celsius. And so when it starts hitting, you know, ambient temperatures, it starts warming up very quickly. And that's part of why they had to vent it, because they were worried that as it warmed up, it might cause an explosion in the tanker cars. So what they were trying to do, and the first responders were just trying to mitigate a bad situation and trying to pick the least bad option here.
Right. Okay. So they created this towering plume of smoke, which you can still see. When do they say it's going to dissipate?
I mean, I think they say right now that it's actually safe to return. They've told residents that the airborne contamination is below safe levels. But, you know, the human nose is also a chemical sensor, and it's much more sensitive than a lot of these instruments. And residents have said that they can still smell chemicals in the air. And officials have been reassuring them, residents saying that it's safe to return, but residents saying that they've had, you know, nausea, headaches, and other kinds of health problems as well. So I guess what they're being told and what they're actually experiencing, there seems to be a disconnect here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, so this is not the first time that this has happened. So it happened in 2012 in New Jersey, a similar situation. A train derailed and spilled 23,000 gallons of vinyl chloride into a creek. So what did the government do then?
at that point, you know, the government, because it went directly into the water, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration was involved in the response. And what they tried to do was to contain that spill and prevent it from leaching into waterways and into drinking water there. And for the most part, they managed to successfully do that. But the key point there is then, like, what did they do since then to prevent future, derailments and accidents and spills like this? And the fact that this has happened again kind of indicates that whatever they've been doing hasn't been enough. And so since then, like, one of the key measures that was proposed was to improve the brakes on trains, particularly using this electronically controlled pneumatic braking system for trains that allow the train cars individually to be stopped, and that can reduce the braking distance required for trains. The trouble is that's a very expensive system to install, and rail companies have successfully lobbied the government to lift the requirement to have this braking system installed on trains that carry highly flammable material.
Right. So the Obama administration wanted this to happen, that they install these brakes, and they were able to beat that back. And in the Trump administration, they got that successfully reverse that idea. So the idea now, how they brake now, and these trains, by the way, are really long. This one was 2 miles long, as I understand it. The braking starts at the beginning, and then it just travels down the length of those 2 miles.
I mean, different trains have slightly different braking mechanisms, but in general, it takes braking itself is an ordeal. It can take several miles for a train to come to a complete stop. And so this is not something you can do at the last minute. You can't slam the brakes when you start noticing that something is going wrong. And that's only one part of this. I mean, well, what the National Transportation Safety Board, the organization that investigates these accidents, has said so far is that one of the potential causes here was a seized bearing inside one of the wheels. Basically the rollers that the wheels sit on that allow them to spin freely. And I talked to some formal officials who said that, you know, there are sensors that are built into railroad tracks that can detect these things, but they're not placed close enough together to catch them in time. So train operators oftentimes, even by the time they do get an alert, there's nothing they can do about it. So one proposed fix for this is to have a more robust networks and system of monitoring to be able to detect these problems and give the conductors, you know, time to react and respond.
Well, we should note also that in general, the rail system is safe, very safe, right? It has a very low accident rate.
Yeah, in general, especially when you compare it to shipping, you know, chemicals on the road. And over the past few years, we've actually seen fewer derailments. But because the trains themselves are getting longer and train companies are cutting the number of personnel, when accidents do occur, they tend to be more severe than they would be with shorter trains or with, more personnel that could more readily respond to this. So there are a number of different factors at play here. And that's kind of the thing that we have to balance.
Well, speaking of cutting personnel, the industry has cut roughly 30% of its workforce in recent years. And I'm wondering how, if they had more workers on this train at the time of this derailment, how could they have averted disaster if there were more workers?
I mean, generally being able to conduct the inspections on trains ahead of time, the rail industry in the U.S. is almost entirely privatized. So the rails themselves, the trains that run on them, the maintenance workers, the inspection, and all the other things that go into making these things run are in private hands. And so if they had more personnel, perhaps they could have done more close and rigorous inspections that have caught, you know, potential failures before they occur. That's one aspect of this. And the other is that, you know, if they had more conductors available, they wouldn't have to make these trains so long. You know, this was a train that had 141 cars in it. And part of the reason is that they can divide personnel among more and more cars. And so if you ran shorter trains, effectively you would have less, physical forces operating in the train, and you would have more personnel supervising each given car.
And who is in the government responsible for overseeing this?
That's another big problem. There's, you know, a half dozen different federal agencies that have different slices of the rail industry that they have to oversee. So the business side is overseen by the Surface Transportation Board. The Federal Railroad Administration regulates safety. The Pipeline and Hazardous Materials and Safety Administration, they handle hazardous materials that are shipped on rail. Then you have groups like the Environmental Protection Agency and NOAA that respond to spills and measure their environmental impacts. And then the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, they're in charge of investigating this. And so when a rail you know, when a train derails, you know, you have a whole bunch of different federal agencies that have to come into play here. And sometimes coordinating between them can be a little bit tedious. And I think that's where a lot of the residents in East Palestine are kind of struggling with right now. They're trying to figure out who ultimately can they hold accountable for what's going on here. And, you know, the rail company didn't show up to a town hall meeting that they just recently had. And for them, it's just like they want to know, you know, is it safe? Can they trust the sensors that the Environmental Protection Agency is using? And if there are problems that happen down the line, who can they talk to? And right now, there are no clear answers to those things.
Umair Irfan, you have made this totally digestible and understandable, a very complex topic. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Umair Irfan, he covers climate change and energy policy for Vox. Coming up, how amateur sleuths crack the case of a 30-year-old murder of a young gay porn actor. That story is next on Press Play.